Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
This is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for each and every one of you. Hallie, how are you?
I'm okay. We're recording this on Friday, March 7th. And so it was the week of Trump's congressional address, which I guess technically wasn't a State of the Union, but I'm like, I guess nothing matters anymore.
It doesn't matter.
But it's just been like a crazy week of trying to follow the news about like Ukraine for work. And then like today I wake up and it's like now Trump is considering large scale sanctions and tariffs on Russia to try to force Russia to make the deal. And I'm like, not even the next 4 years, but it's like every time this happens, I'm like, okay, so for the next 1,000 years, this is what we want to be doing.
Right. Cause like undoing all of this will take more than just like electing a centrist Democrat. Like,
right. And speaking of, girl, I mean, like, listen, and this is something that we all need to see. I need to see this as someone who, until recently, considered themselves a liberal. And look, I'll vote Democrat if I have to, obviously. Like, I'm not crazy. But seeing them just have nothing to push back on. And I appreciate AOC and Bernie and anyone who is pushing back. Like, I really do give them a lot of credit. But, like, it just seems like most of them. And then 10 of them voted to censure Al Green, the Congressman Al Green, for disrupting the congressional address. And then I was like, what is wrong with you people? Like, they're clinging to an illusion of a government that doesn't exist anymore. And I was like, we got to get you guys out of there. Those 10, you're out of here.
Yeah, you guys got to go.
Yeah, for sure.
Got to go. Two were from New York, I believe.
Jesus.
Sousa and somebody else. And I'm just like, my God, you absolute pieces of shit.
Just living it
up. I saw somebody post on Blue Sky that, like, one of the biggest issues is like so many of the Democrats like are like that are in the way, like Nancy Pelosi, like there's so many established deeply online people that are trying to, like, they don't even, I'm sure, like, they know what's happening on the internet and like what Elon and like all of these losers that are in charge are saying, but they're not really immersed in that world, and they think that that world is like separate from the one they live in, and it's not. And like, I was like, that is an interesting point.
Absolutely. I think that's a huge issue. I think, again, like, I'm certainly not a leftist and haven't been online in that way, in a way that I think a lot of people were flagging this in terms of like, okay, so this is part of the reason we're going to head towards authoritarianism. Yeah. And I think there's some interview with Elon Musk where he talks about like, oh, well, there'll be a digital God soon. And a lot of these like sort of tech pro libertarians, like they're just reinventing God. Of course, like their God where like they get to be God too, or like they get to serve him.
Yeah.
And like
they're all the Pope of digital God or something.
Yeah, the
weird.
Pope of hell. Great. You know, and I think it's like, had we or the Congress been more online, it would have been easier to see this. But also, I understand now, like, sort of people, you know, leftist complaints about Democrats really being a hindrance. And I think it's like, at this point, if you're voting to censure one of your fellow Democrats for interrupting the rantings of a madman in control of the global
everything
political climate, then you are the problem, right?
Yes.
And I think that's all of us to think about the next 2 to 4 years is like, okay, so who's been a huge fucking problem? Who's been an impediment to us actually? Yeah, like, they're out. Like, we can't be doing this for 1,000 years. Like,
no.
So whatever that means, people either gotta shape up or ship out, and we don't have to do this bullshit where, like, every 4 years, baby, it's over.
It's over. You know?
So that's it. I'm going back and I'm watching all of I've talked about the YouTuber ContraPoints, like watching all of her videos from the beginning. Yeah. And the first one that she has up is about Charlottesville, and just sort of talking about like being a really online person on the left. Mm-hmm. And then it makes you seem really paranoid because you're like, oh, right. these racists and white supremacists are using these like coded language and like remember like the OK sign.
Yes.
And then to people who are not online, it's like, well, you seem insane. Like you seem like the paranoid left.
Right.
And she's like, right. That's part of it. They want it to be like deniable because they're never going to go out and say it. Now, of course, we've got to the point where people are just saying it out
loud.
Yeah,
now they're emboldened too.
Right, because we ignored that and we sort of made people seem hysterical or like, oh, well, you're just like blowing us out of proportion. It's like, well, they weren't. Maybe they weren't communicating it exactly right, but like there's not really a field guide exactly for like how this works on the internet. So they could be forgiven for being paranoid if they were, but also they weren't. And here
right.
we are.
And here we are.
You know, and all these fucking turds are in charge of everything, which is, not great. How are you doing, Allison?
I'm all right. I had a rough week at the dentist. I feel like one of us is always having a tough time
sure
at the
are.
Dentist.
Sure
As you get
are.
Older, take care of those chompers.
For the love of God, you're going to really regret it if you don't.
It is not. It's not worth the extra, 3 minutes you save by not brushing your teeth when you go to sleep. Like, it's just not...
This is an ADHD hack for all y'all out there. I will just put a toothbrush. I have a toothbrush and a little packet of toothpaste in my nightstand. Because there are times when I lay down, I'm like, I can't get back up. Guess what? At least I'm brushing my teeth in bed. And I have like a cup, obviously.
Yes. I had
plan
to get
around yourself.
Deep cleaning, which they have to numb you for. And for insurance reasons, they have to split it up into two appointments.
Yes, of course. Why wouldn't they?
Right.
Yes.
There's no medical reason. I mean, like, I am kind of like glad that it wasn't all at once because it would have been like a really tough day. But like, still, I had to go to the dentist twice in 2 days, which was also not fun.
And you said it was the left and right side of
yes,
the mouth?
Yes, they do left and right.
Yeah, that's... I guess I could have done top-bottom, too. It would have been kind of the same.
Both feel insane. It just feels... Like, if the reason was we like to give people a break because this can be pretty grueling, I would get it. But to just be like, the insurance literally won't cover it if we...
That's
and I'm like,
so
then
fucked.
I look at the bill, I'm like, what was even covered?
Right. Well, that's a great question.
Yeah, it spent like a... computer's worth of money on my stupid teeth this week. But the deep cleaning, they have to numb you, and it's basically a regular cleaning, but like they know you're numb, so they can just really get in there, and then you're sore afterwards because they're just
now they
scraping.
Scrape it like under your gum line too. Is that the idea? Or okay.
Yeah, because it's mostly if you're having like gum inflammation, which I was. They were and then
I would say
I needed
we're
one.
In our 40s. Yeah,
I had an old silver cavity that had to or like a filling that was like. We had to get rid of it, and they're putting in a ceramic one, and I'm like, that also like it was the first time I've like that they kept going when I said stop.
Oh God,
because I was like, she was like, I have 20 more seconds, like you like we are finishing this up, and I was like, no, I feel it, and she was like,
oh my God,
she was like, I'm almost done, it's not worth me stopping, and I was like, okay.
Oh my God, that's so hard because I'm also incredibly squeamish and pain averse, and so I'm constantly like, I'm very sorry, I'm going to try to restrain myself, but I will be crying and flailing around in this chair.
Yes, the one thing about that kind of like the drilling pain is that like the second they stop, it goes away. Like it's not like necessarily like, oh no, and now I'm extra like. I am like sore from the cleaning, but like that's like the thing where they're like, and then she stops. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Thank you. Like, it's such a strange because it's like it's just about like that nerve.
Yeah, dental pain is so specifically terrifying, but also like it's so incredibly painful and off-putting, and yet we treat it like it's nothing. Like it's just like a
right. It's
casual
like, come on,
pain,
you're fine.
Exactly.
You're fine.
Yeah.
And like I was like talking to my hygienist who I'm in love with, and he's just like really nice and cool.
Can you ask him out?
No, he has a kid.
All right.
I was like, it's so crazy. I've had 4 spine surgeries. I used to regularly get spinal nerve injections that require shots just to get the shots. Like, and I like handle that with like nothing. They clean my teeth, tears coming from my eyes.
That's so crazy. Interesting. Yeah. Just to see how pain works. I guess your brain's right there too. So I feel
the
like it's
sounds
like an extra...
don't help.
No, the smell. I had to get, I said this before on the pod, I'm sorry, but when I was getting, I get an overlay. They or it was a crown rather, and they had to burn away part of the gum line because it had grown up, and the smell of my burning gums really got to me.
Yeah, or like your like teeth, like the drilling of the teeth turning that, like I just also like Where'd all that tooth go? Did I swallow it?
I definitely have found like little particles afterwards, and I'm like, this must just be pulverized tooth that they've not cleaned out.
Oh, outside bones.
Well, I'm excited that we really whet your appetite, and of course, your mouth is full of bone tooth dust as your your mouth becomes waters.
Oh, hey guys, we are just popping in to let you know that, of course, we are doing another live show, as we always do every month. And this month for March, we are going to have a live show on Sunday, March 30th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And we are doing
Oz Perkins the Monkey, which is beginning rave reviews. And hopefully I will also be giving it a rave. And if not, well, that's good, too.
You can get your tickets at moment.co/ruined. That's moment.co/ruined. Or if you are a $20 Patreon tier member, you'll be getting them in your inbox sometime that day. And we'll do all of our normal fun stuff. We'll have the chat. We'll have games. We'll have Hallie's hot takes on a hot movie.
We're gonna be hot, baby.
We're going to be hot.
So please join us. So let's begin and get into our movie of the week. This is, of course, part of March's Good for Her. Good for her month.
Good for her.
The movie we are doing, I actually was like not like necessarily jazzed to see it because the movie we're doing is Ty West Maxine, which is the third movie in his X Pearl Maxine trilogy. And I thought X was what it was. It didn't, you know, knock my socks off, but I think there's some very competent performances. It just didn't do it for me. I barely want to do Pearl. I think Pearl was nothing. Pearl feels like a third movie he had to make to fulfill a contract. Okay. So I was like, oh, well, there's no way Maxine is going to be good. I loved it. I love this movie.
Great.
I was so pleasantly
surprised.
The
trailer looks good.
Yeah, I guess it feels like the most movie of the three. Like the other two are like, what I mean? Ruminations on perhaps a form rather than we're giving you the thrills, the chills. And this leads more into like a slasher exploitation. Mm-hmm. There, at a certain point, a sawed-off shotgun appears. So I really like this vibe in terms of horror. But shout out. And also, I liked Mia Goth in this. I think she's also someone who has her strengths. And I think she played this to a plum in the movie. And before we always like to have Allison watch the trailer before we get started. Allison, what are your thoughts about the Maxine trailer?
I mean, this looked fun as hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Great cast. I do love the making scary movies about scary movies. Here's a bucket of fake blood, and then it's like, you know, somebody getting strangled for real. Like, I just think that's such
a fun.
It's
so
fun. World.
I completely agree. It's very giallo too. It's sort of like drawing from that. Where there is a lot of
It reminded me, what was the one giallo film we did? I believe it was French. Maybe it was like a queer film.
Knife plus heart. Cross heart. Yes. Also, a modern giallo playing with that sort of the man with leather gloves, woman being stalked by an alley, a blood covered knife raised. Loved. And I thought I thought Ty West did a great job of, you know, sort of his take on this genre was super fun. And also, I just love it in general. So he got me. And in terms of like a baseline scary, Allison, how scary would you find finally getting your big break in Hollywood only for someone to start sending you secret messages implying that they know about your involvement in a serial murder, which of course took place in the movie X?
Ooh, that's not good. But also, you have to know that's coming.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
I no longer have this fear, and perhaps that's wrong, of like getting any kind of visible success and then having people come out of the woodwork with I am not afraid of getting canceled in any way. I don't feel like that's something that could or would happen to me. And if it did, I would probably deserve it. But like just like a bad story, like, you know, just like the second someone gets famous and some asshole's like, she actually like hates my dog. Like, just like people want to cling to your fame. Mm-hmm. So like, I would imagine if you were part of a serial murder and that would be something, you know, is a possibility.
That's a good point. And you'd probably have to, in order to like, you could keep it going. I think plenty of people would go see a serial murderer in a movie, but you'd probably have to take a
we've
MAGA
all
turn.
Done it.
You'd have to have some sort of right wing podcast. You have to have a Patreon. Yes. Frankly, you'd probably be more successful if you were a serial murderer.
Yes. And people found out. And culture.
Yeah, I would never, if I was involved with something like that, this is why I ultimately would have to go turn myself into the police. Not because I necessarily, like, you know, wasn't her fault, if you recall from the events of X. And we will be, don't worry, flashing back to it throughout this movie, which I appreciated. Like, even if you haven't seen it, you sort of could piece together, like, oh, okay. But, like, I would not be able to keep it secret. I would not be able to hide it. I would be just shaking and vomiting all day, every day, especially if I got something, I would know it's coming out. So I wouldn't be able to handle the stress of that. And then finally, Allison, would you like to guess the twist in Maxine?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess, because she lives, is Pearl come after this in chronology?
Yeah, so basically this Maxine is a direct sequel. It takes place, I believe, 6 years after X. Pearl is a prequel to X. So Pearl, you don't have to factor that in. So the fact we haven't done it, we will do it eventually, but, like, it doesn't really play into the plot. But yes, just as a refresher, the events of X, Maxine is our final girl, our sole survivor. She has moved on. She has made it to LA, and she's finally starting to get the audition she really wants. Unfortunately, her past will catch up with her.
Would you say there's a twist or no?
I thought it was a twist. Okay. I feel like, well, I watched it a second time, like, I guess I should have figured this out. But yes, there's a twist in terms of, like, who is sort of following her, who's trying to undermine her career.
I mean, I think that there's going to be somebody who saw what happened. Like, somebody else was there and, like, maybe doesn't know the whole story, but knows Maxine was there and knows that there are people that are dead. And that's the person who is stalking her.
Okay, great. Fabulous.
I don't know if you guys are like us. I assume you are if you're listening, but we are trying to optimize our nutrition this year a little bit and try and eating, like, real balanced full meals with all the things you're supposed to eat. And Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They are dietitian approved and ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes. So you can fuel right and feel great no matter what life throws at you. I was very surprised how much I loved Factor. Like, I'm somebody who cooks. I love cooking, and it's still, like, it is an overwhelming nightmare to make yourself a balanced meal every single day for 3 meals a day. And this does make my life 1 billion times easier.
I agree. It has Factor has 40 options across 8 dietary preferences. Their preferences are, like, calorie smart, protein plus, keto. I also thought this was something that's really helpful. In my mind, this is something that, like, would be useful to use if you're going through a very busy period of your life.
Yes.
Let's say you know, like, if there's one thing you like to take off your plate, it's having nutritionally sound meals at home. Factor is a good option for sure.
It's cooking or eating, like, a bag of chips as a meal. And this is such a perfect way to avoid eating the bag of chips and also avoid cooking. Right. I really also love that there's stuff besides the meals. Like, I got some juices, and there was, like, a pineapple Thai basil one that was, like, I love a cold pressed juice. I love a stupid drink. I'm always going to want one of those. And they have stuff like that, which is also convenient because it's just ready to go, delivered to your home, in your fridge for whatever you want it.
Yeah, I feel like every meal I had from Factor was, like, if I had made this, I would consider it a profound success.
Yes.
Also, you're not ordering in. That's always my thing, is, like, I'd rather have something that I know is at home, that is healthy, that I know the ingredients, versus I'm about to spend 50 doll hairs to buy the most insane meal a human being has ever consumed in one sitting, which, you know, is what I want to do. So to have a healthy option at home, I think, is a really good option.
So eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/ruined50off and use code ruined50off to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code ruined50off at factormeals.com/ruined50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
Let us begin ruining Maxine. And I will also say another thing I love about this movie is this is an A24 movie. And I think it is A24 worthy because it has some excellent needle drops. I thought they were really fun moments of true gore with, like, a very fun 80s movie or 80s song playing over
great
it.
Soundtrack.
We open on black and white footage of a very young Maxine Minx. Of course, played by Mia Goth. She's probably 8 years old. She's dancing on, sort of looks like a tent revival, you know, and under a banner that says, Jesus is Lord. And we hear the voice, presumably of her father, saying, you're going to be a star of the church one day if you want. And she says, I just want to be like you, Dad. And her dad says, then you'll have to work really hard. What do we always say? And this is a line that was also at the end of X. They say it together in unison. I will not accept a life I do not deserve. And her dad said, that's right, Maxine. Very good. And we get a quote in script handwriting across the screen. In this business, until you're known as a monster, you're not a star. Betty Davis. Love that. And I was like, oh, it'd be fun. Maybe not poor name. Maybe a drag name. Better Davis. I don't know.
Oh, I like that.
We see sort of the giant door of a studio space slide open, and we see Maxine walk in. She looks incredible. She's got long, blonde, curly hair. She's got, like, it's a full denim look, blue eyeshadow because it's 1985, and she's in for an audition for the movie The Puritan 2, a horror sequel, as this is also a horror sequel. And she is interviewed by the casting director, producer, and the director, Elizabeth Bender, who's played by Elizabeth Debicki, who I guess I've never seen her in anything.
I don't think I know, like, she is Diana in The Crown, but I don't know if I have seen
She's in Tenet. She's in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and 3. Also, I haven't seen that. She's in Widows. Yeah, she's in The Night Manager. A ton of stuff that apparently she's great in. Haven't seen a goddamn minute of her career, apparently, but she's great in this. They have Maxine sit down and say, well, so your agent tells us you're a big name in the adult film industry. Why audition for a regular film? And Maxine says, and of course, Mia Goth is doing a Southern accent the entire time. She's like, I've always wanted to be famous, but I have bigger aspirations. I mean, I'm about to be 33, and in hardcore, well, women age like bread, not like wine. And the way I look at it, acting is acting. And Elizabeth Bender says, is that your real accent? Which I thought was fun. And she says, of course. Yeah. They roll tape. They have her give a monologue to camera. She is playing this character Veronica in the sequel. It takes place in the 1950s. The casting director tells her Veronica walks into her perfect home. Something isn't right. In fact, it never was. She turns to the camera and through her trauma addresses the lens directly. And then Maxine gives a monologue and crushes it. Does a great job. Your eyes are filling with tears. She said, it's hard to believe it's true. I've seen the devil stalking me like a specter from the past, haunting my dreams. I can feel his power inside of me, something evil forcing me to do awful things. Whatever horrible thing happened here 300 years ago, it's not over.
Satan has come back to make me pay for my greatest sin, the sin of living.
They're all like, all right, okay, we see what you're bringing to the table. And then the casting director says, great, before you go, would you mind taking off your top so we can see your breasts? And she's like, no problem, unzips it. Mm-hmm. And then she's out of there. And she struts out past this huge line of all blonde women who are waiting. And she's like, y'all can go home because I fucking nailed that, bitches. And then gets into her incredible convertible. All the cars are great. All the looks are really fun. And she's like,
what year is that?
It's 1985.
Okay. Perfect.
And if you didn't know, don't worry. Right now is when it appears on the screen that it's 1985. So, and X takes place in 1979. Yeah. And she peels away, and we see all these conservative Christian protesters outside the studio lot, you know, mm-hmm. with signs like, stop this rot, horror is porn, shut this down, depravity, you know, standing up against pretty much everything in the 90s. I feel like we see, right now we kind of get a montage as she drives through Los Angeles. We see, like, shooting sprees, satanic murder, sort of Twisted Sister testifying before Congress. So all this, like, sort of moral outrage going on while there's also, like, actual horrific things happening in LA. And we get a clip of Reagan saying, don't let anyone tell you America's best days are behind her, in case we didn't know what we're saying. And finally, on the news, we see a report. At first, the police thought the murder of a young woman was an isolated act of violence. But since then, they believe it's connected to a wider range of murders by a killer who has become known as the Night Stalker.
Ooh.
So that, of course, is a real serial killer that is happening simultaneous to this. Richard Ramirez, I'm not going to get into it. You can listen to literally any true crime podcast. They have unpacked this. But he went on a killing spree from April 1984 to August 1985. So this was happening. He killed 14 people.
Jesus.
In that time period. So obviously people are terrified. They're finding bodies all over the place. And so this is happening while these events are also taking place. Meanwhile, of course, we're seeing on the news like all these protesters, like this is, we're blaming Hollywood. There's like a Dungeons and Dragons get blamed for inciting a murder, like just sort of like people blaming, pointing to all these parts of culture for something that has always existed in humanity, which of course is a violence mm-hmm. that we refuse to acknowledge or control. And we see Maxine roll up to her day job at the Landing Strip, which of course is a strip club near the airport. And I do love that name. Fun. That's great. In the back, we see her walk past sort of the stage area into the back, which is labeled Flight Crew Only, where they are shooting a porno. And she walks into the set past a huge American flag. There's a lot of great visuals in this. And we see a porn actress, her name is Amber, is getting railed. And she shouts, "Hey, Maxine." And the director says, "Amber, we're just almost done. If you could just wrap it up." And Amber's like, "You said that three positions ago. I was just saying hi." And we see this guy Shepard, and it's unclear to me whether he's the director, he's just a bouncer because he has a baseball bat. But he calls over to Maxine and says, "Oh, as soon as Frankie Love here decides he can bust, we'll be ready for you." So she's getting ready for the next scene after they're done. And she goes to change in sort of like a sexy nurse's outfit for her porno. We hear a little bit more about the Night Stalker murders. Obviously, it's like just in the background at all time. And Amber comes in, finally done. And she's like, "You know, I'm supposed to be in Toluca Lake an hour ago. Would you want to go with me? I'm going to this huge party in the hills. There's going to be loads of rich guys." Maxine said, "Thanks, but I'm going to be at Show World tonight." And Amber says, "Ugh, you're never not working, are you?" And so Amber leaves. We see Maxine opens up like a ceramic swan. And there must be a pound and a half of cocaine in this thing.
Incredible.
And just takes a little golden spoon. It helps herself. And
so chic.
That night she arrives home. Again, everyone just has landlines. There's a lot of like landline work where people are missing phone calls and like taking phone calls. And it's her agent, Teddy Knight, played by Giancarlo Esposito, who's so fun in this. Love him in this.
He's just a great actor.
And we just saw him in Abigail. And I will say, when you see him, you know that some sort of horrific act of violence will be occurring, either from him or around him.
Yes, that is his vibe.
And he tells her, "I'm so sorry you didn't get the Lizzie Borden video that she had just auditioned for." And she's like, "I knew it."
She was trying to be in ours.
Truly. She's like, "I fucked on film and now the town wants to paint me with a Scarlet X." And we see her going through a closet and she picks out a pearl-handled revolver. And so now we know that she carries a gun. Basically, like, if she has to be out at night, she just has a gun. And I think the implication is, like, she's a smart lady. She's going to handle herself. And he says, "I know, but do you want to hear the good news? You got the part in the Puritan 2. And of course she's over the moon, and she runs down to, there's a movie rental place below her apartment where her friend Leon works. And it's not spelled out specifically, but I take that Leon is gay and is like her one friend, like, outside of the industry. And she says, "I want you to name five celebrities who got their start in horror movies." He goes, "Okay, there's Jamie Lee Curtis, John Travolta, Demi Moore, Brooke Shields." And she says, "And Maxine fucking Minx, I got it." He's like, "Oh, I'm really excited for you. Elizabeth Bender is a very underrated director. Like, this is going to be incredible for you." She says, "Thank you. How about you go ahead and get me champagne and pizza, because we're going to celebrate the Scream Queen." And she's like, "I love you. You're like, you know, thank you so much." And he says, "You only love me because I'm the only person in your life who doesn't try to fuck you." And that seems to be the case. Meanwhile, she goes to get ready for her job at Show World, which is like a peep show. So the implication is like the movie store is like the front, and then she goes into like the back, which like, there's a guy where, I don't know if you buy a ticket or you pay up front, but then you go into an individual little peep show,
like
booth.
A booth.
Right.
Yeah.
And so she like puts on a fabulous little black bob wig and like black lingerie, and then she's behind a sheet of glass, obviously. And we also get, like, it's Hollywood Boulevard of 1985, you know, Charlie Chaplin's breakdancers, sex workers. And we see her when she's in her booth getting ready, and she's sort of on a chaise lounge, you know, sort of getting ready. And we see someone enter the booth to sit down. And we see a pair of jet black gloves and put in a quarter, and then the door lifts and we see it just starts to do sort of, you know, an erotic dance. And unfortunately, this really works up whoever this person is with the gloves, and they grab the edge of the base sort of the window and they rip it off. They're so either aggravated or turned on, or presumably, unfortunately, both.
Yeah.
When she's done dancing, she and her fellow dancer Tabby, played by Halsey, who I thought did a fine job
on
this.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, good for her. They walk out to get a hot dog, and Tabby says, "You know, I never like to go out alone, you know, like, because of the Night Stalker." The news says it's devil worship. And, you know, but they're talking about like, well, you know, I guess the flip side of being killed by a serial killer is like, I wouldn't know the name Elizabeth Short without the Black Dahlia. So it's like, oh, well, I guess if you're murdered, then people will know your name. And Tabby says, echoing what Amber said earlier, you know, do you want to come to a party up in the hills tonight? I got invited. The house is sickening. It's right up under the Hollywood sign. You have to take a little gondola to get up there. It's like incredible. But Maxie says, I would, but I have to go in early to be fitted for my costumes for Puritan 2. And Tabby says, oh, it's a horror movie? Honey, you're not going to the top in no horror movie. She's like, I will. You don't have to worry about me. I've been through a lot. And we see Maxine throw her cigarette on the Hollywood star of Theda Bara, who is not, she's a silent film star who's also sort of like a sex symbol. Like she was the vamp, sort of like the original like archetype of that. So again, I appreciate the little thoughtful touches.
Yes.
Allison, we see, she walks past an electronics store. We see there's been yet another murder. And she cuts through this terrifying dark alley. I think the idea is supposed to be like, it's like 3 a.m, no one is out anymore. And we see a man following her.
She could be 9 at night in LA.
For sure. She gets to the end of the alley and it was like chain link fence, the door is locked. And when she turns around, unfortunately, the man at the end of the alley is holding a switchblade and he is one of the Hollywood Boulevard people. He's Buster Keaton. And now it's all Spider-Man and Jack Sparrow, but he sort of waddles up to her and he says, you know, you can run and you can hide, but you'll never get away. Unfortunately for this guy, Maxine does have a gun on her and she whirls around and points at him. He's like, I was just kidding. It's like you were holding a gun or holding a knife in the middle of the night, you know? And she says, oh, it's a joke. Huh? So you like games. How about you strip down and you get on the ground? Allison, when he does, Maxine shoves her gun barrel into his mouth and says, suck. And he just has to like give her gun a blowjob. And finally, she instructs him to lay down, face down the ground, totally naked. And she says, you know, do you know what happened to the last person who tried to kill me? I crushed her fucking head. This, of course, is an allusion to the end of X when she ran over Pearl's head as she drove away from the site of the serial murder. And with that, Allison, Maxine stomps down her high heels, crushing this guy's ball sack.
Oh.
And his scrotum basically explodes as he shrieks. So it's not even just like she's like injuring him, and it bursts. And we see his balls basically fly out in an explosion of blood. You hate to see it.
You hate to see that.
And we cut from his screaming face to that of Lily Collins, who plays the actress Molly, who was in the original The Puritan. And the Puritan one ends with her being burned at the stake in her pilgrim outfit. Love.
Love.
And we see Maxine has invited Leon over and they've fallen asleep on the couch. Again, he's a safe friend in a dangerous world. Suddenly there's a knock on the door. Maxine again opens it. She's like in her underwear. It's the middle of the night. It's like, don't just open the door. But she does, and she turns to see someone, a figure in black, disappear behind the elevator door, and she looks down, and there's a package.
Uh-oh.
And inside is a VHS tape with the word for Maxine.
Uh-oh.
And she puts it on. Leon's asleep on the couch, so he doesn't see this part, but she puts it in, and it says, Police Evidence, Texas Police Department. Allison, it is the porno she and her friends were filming in X, just before they all get murdered by Pearl and her husband, Harold, leaving Maxine as the final girl. But of course she's like, not simply who, I guess like this was in police evidence, who would have gotten this and why are they sending it to me?
Right.
Just when I'm about to have my big break. Leon then wakes up and Maxine like ejects and runs into her room. He's like, I try to check on her and she says, I'm fine. So he leaves. And this is a tough one. I'm like, girl, you should have told Leon. You should have just told him right then. You know, then at least somebody else would know and you could bring someone in. Yeah.
This is the moment where it's like, okay, this just arrived in your hands. Like, loop him in. Be like, don't tell anyone else right now. But at least they have each other. Like, they're just.
Exactly.
It's, if we've learned
a lesson
anything,
for all of us, please just tell Leon.
Just tell Leon.
We see him put on his Walkman. And again, it's supposed to be like 4 a.m. He puts on his Walkman and he starts to skateboard home past a man sitting in his car. And that man is private detective John Labatt, played with gusto by Kevin Bacon.
Terrific.
And he constantly has like, you know, like those brown aviator sunglasses with a big mustache and like a fedora.
Yeah.
And he, of course, is doing a Southern accent as well.
Yeah, he looks great.
And he turns to the man in the passenger seat, who we're understanding is this man is the one who dropped off the VHS. So John Labatt is working for whoever this person is.
Okay.
And we don't see that it's a man. I'm just going to refer to it as the man, but we don't know the gender of this person.
Okay.
And John says, money talks and bullshit walks. Now you asked me to find that girl, and I did. But whatever sick shit you got planned next, we're going to pay me a lot more to be a part of it, okay? And of course, this guy, we see this, he's just like grips his black leather gloves the same way we saw in the Peep Show. Obviously, he's stalking her. Allison, unfortunately, we now see camcorder video of a man in a white shirt, black pants, very Mormon looking.
Okay.
In a hotel room. And when he slides open the closet door, we unfortunately see Maxine's coworkers, Tabby and Amber. They are both tied up, blindfolded, and sobbing. So both these women, who were going again to the party in the hills, instead been put into a closet. And of course, God knows what's about to happen to them. It's not going to be good.
The opposite of a party in the hills. A hotel closet with a Mormon.
A party in the cemetery.
Oh.
Unfortunately, we see two other men, also in white shirts, black pants, take Tabby out of the closet, blindfolded, and take her through a set of double doors that are green. And we see the cameraman turn, and he's a guy with a big beard. And when they haul her inside, we see a black gloved hand grab her face, and she screams. The next day, Maxine heads over to the set of the Puritan 2 for a costume fitting, including a cast of her face. So they have to do the full,
yes,
like, clay cast. Do you think you could do that? I don't think I could. No.
No. No.
I would just be suffocating the whole time.
Yeah. I remember when I was in, like, elementary school, maybe, we did paper mache masks of each other. And that alone was, like, I couldn't do it. And that took, like, 10 minutes. Like,
yeah. I just wouldn't be able to be in the movie if that's what was necessary.
Yeah, that's like that. I'm not like I just there's a level to which I just can't. There's nothing on the other side of it is worth it.
You just have to use a coconut with a wig on it for me.
Yeah, and honestly, that's my skin texture.
The caster, who is played by Sophie Thatcher, tells Maxine, it's going to take 10 minutes. Don't worry. Your nose will be, you'll be able to breathe through your nose, but it is uncomfortable because I have to cover your entire head. And she also sees a scar on Maxine's arm and says, whoa, that's pretty gnarly. What's that from? And Maxine says, I got shot, which of course happened in X. And the caster tries to like press it, but Maxine says, it's a long story. So we see the caster cover her in clay, making sure that she can breathe through her nostrils, and says, I'm going to be back. I'm going to set the time for 10 minutes. I'm going to go get more bandages. And I'll be right back. Don't leave people like that. You can't leave someone alone like that.
No, you have to leave somebody with, like, if you have to go get something, then somebody has to be, like, there.
Yeah, just in case they start to suffocate. Unfortunately, now that she's, restricted and can't breathe and has to sit here, she starts having flashbacks to the events of X.
Of course.
And we see sort of that moment, remember when Pearl crawled into bed with her? And the moment where Pearl warned her, you're going to end up just like me. And in her mind's eye, suddenly a pair of old lady hands reach from behind her and start massaging her breasts, like, under the clay, and then finally grabs her throat. And Maxine pitches backwards and starts clawing at the clay, suffocating in a panic. Oh, she's fine. There's nobody actually there, but of course she did fuck up her cast.
Right. Like, that's, that's why you have somebody there who can, like, calm someone down.
Unfortunately, Allison, two bodies have been found at the cemetery, and we see Detectives Williams, played by Michelle Monaghan, and Detective Torres, played by Bobby Cannavale, who's having the time of his life.
Love him.
Chewing the scenery. Really fun.
He's my neighbor. I always see him going to the same restaurant.
Okay, I love him, and he was fabulous in this. And a cop runs over them and says, yeah, two homos cruising Judy Garland's grave found them floating in the duck pond. It's like, all right, okay. They're human beings here. And he says, we think it might be the Night Stalker again. And Williams is kind of like, or do you hope it's the Night Stalker? Like, not everything is the Night Stalker, okay? Right. Unfortunately, it is the dead bodies of Tabby and Amber. They are naked and cut up. And even worse, they are branded with a pentagram. So a pentagram has been seared into their faces. Meanwhile, at work, Maxine, who is shaken from the experience, gets into her convertible, and an AP runs over to talk to her and gives her the script and says, the director Liz wants to see you on set today. I warn you, she's kind of frightening. Like, I've seen her blow a gasket more than once. And then before he goes, he says, I love your work. And he runs away because, of course, she's a porn star, so people recognize her from that. Allison, before Maxine turns on her car, she sees under her windshield wiper a note that says, for a good time, call 213-249-1619. And she goes to a payphone and calls it. And we also see the conservative protesters are on the lot again. And their signs say, Satan stole my daughter. Hollywood needs a change of scene. And horror is not art. Love it. Allison line picks up. We recognize that it's John Labatt, the private detective. And he says, unless you want to find yourself rotting away in some Texas jailhouse, you'll meet me on the 34th floor of the Bonaventure Hotel in 1 hour. Miss Miller. And he hangs up. So, of course, he's like, okay, well, that guy knew my actual last name, which is not a great sign.
Nope.
And when she opens the paper that has the phone number written on it, of course, it's a photo of her high school yearbook. And she's circled in her real name, Maxine Miller.
Yes.
Also, the Westin Bonaventure Hotel, which is downtown LA, is in so many movies because it is this like incredibly 80s like series of mirrored cylinders. Like, it looks very futuristic in an 80s way. So it's in a lot. It is beautiful. And I love that that is in the film. And she finds him in the dining room on the 34th floor. And he says, well, ain't you that dirty movie actress? Boy, you're a lot taller in person, though. I guess I've only ever seen you lying on your back. She's like, sir, how about we figure this out so I can get the hell out of here? He says, I was hired to find you, but my employer wants to reveal himself to you in time. He has a flair for the dramatic, let me just say. And he says, I'm going to list off some names to you. Wayne Gilroy, Bobby Lynn Parker, RJ Nichols, Lorraine Day, and Jackson Hollis. And we see, you know, Maxine react. And what about Howard and Pearl Douglas? So, of course, that first list was her friends who died during X, and then Howard and Pearl were the murderers. But, of course, no one would know that because they both ended up dead, and then she peeled away, right? So, from the outside, it could look like she killed all of them, right? Or at least it was part of it.
Yes.
And he says, you know, they never did catch a person who murdered them. Isn't that funny? And he says, your past is not past for you, Maxine. It'll knock on your door until you let it in. Maxine gets quiet and she says, I'm not saying I had anything to do with those people, because I didn't. But even if I did, which again, I did not, there's no way anyone could pin it on me. There's no evidence. And he says, are you certain about that? She, of course, doesn't know how to reply. Yeah. He says, does it weigh on you as a Christian that you lived and your friends didn't? I mean, I'm an atheist, but if I was religious, I mean, that kind of guilt. Well, you know, I guess that's what they say. It's not show friends, it's show business. And she says, okay, I can understand why you called me here. So how much money do you want to basically drop the case? Like, if you're shaking me down, because if you're not going to tell me what's going on or who's trying to find me. And he says, this isn't about money. Maxine says, obviously, everything is about money. He says, well, maybe for whores like you and me. But my employer wants retribution. And he says, sir, there's a soiree tonight. And he gives her an envelope with an address. And he says, I suggest you go to it. And she says, well, what if I don't? He says, well, how's the saying go? You'll never work in this town again. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, I would, like, this is where you really have to loop someone in who you trust.
Big time.
And, like, I get not necessarily going to, like, the LAPD with this one quite yet, but, like, tell Leon, that's her friend, like, tell Leon and be like, here's everything. I'm getting you as up to date as I feel comfortable. And then I think I would go to that party, but, like, with Leon and maybe with, like, she's got to know some security guys from her various like work that she's done. Like, there's got to be like some door guy that she knows who's like big and scary, where it's like, come keep an eye on me.
Exactly. Like, these, you work in an industry full of shady people, but also this guy's way shadier. So it's like, let's pull in our resources. Let's call Teddy the agent. Let's talk to all the other gals who do porn, you know, like, if nothing else, just start telling people like, hey, just so you know, you know, something to think about. Like, it's like, some guy's following me, make sure no one's following you.
Yeah.
Because if they are picking up other women in the industry and it's not just her, then they do have a right to know. So yeah, just tell as many people as you possibly can. What are they going to say? Oh no, don't tell me to be aware that somebody's like out here murdering people, then stalking you, blackmailing you. Like, come on. Like, I'm sure that happens, unfortunately, all the time.
Yeah.
In any time there's any kind of money or people have lost some sort of control of women, this kind of thing happens. So just give everyone a heads up. But Leon first.
Leon first, and then, like, again, like, maybe find a big scary bouncer who you trust, and then, like, go and, like, see if you can figure out, like, who's behind this and, like, what you might need to
That's
do
true.
To, like, keep it shut down.
What's the thing is, like, if you went to this soiree but you took like 8 people, like, maybe that would be the way to go.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll show up to confront this person, but also I'm bringing every person I know, including the security guys.
Yeah, I'm not gonna come alone and then leave in a body bag. Like, that's not
100%.
That's not it.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tomtandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
John stands to leave and says, I would go to this party if I were you. I'd hate to see that lost movie of yours end up on the nightly news because contrary to popular belief, Miss Minx, there is such a thing as bad press. And then he puts on his hat because that's a hat putting online.
Yes, it is.
And he leaves. And she looks at the address on the envelope and says 166 Starlight Drive. And inside the envelope is a newspaper clipping about the deaths in X and the headline Texas Porn Star Massacre, which is fun.
That's
because,
fun.
Of course, all of her other friends were porn stars as well. Maxine gets home, and right as she's opening her front door, Detectives Williams and Torres stop her. And they show her headshots of Tabby and Amber and say, now, these are work colleagues of yours. We've seen you work together, in fact. And you're one of the last people to have seen them alive, it turns out, for both of them. And she says, well, did something happen? They refuse to answer the question. And Maxine says, okay, well, I don't talk to police. And they go inside. And now Williams and Torres also have a fun bit of business where Williams is like, you blew it. You fucked up with all that bullshit bravado. You should have let me in there. It's nice cop. It's good cop and then bad cop, which again is fun. And we see Maxine go to her window and she takes out the VHS and she goes to find Leon down at the movie store and says, is there a way to find out who made this tape? And he's like, well, no, but I can tell you that this is actually a Quantagi brand tape, which they don't really use anymore. Like, all, you know, Sony and like all these other like Japanese brands have sort of taken over. So I could call around and see like where people still selling them, because like maybe that'll help narrow it down. I mean, I'm like, well, they're probably selling them in Texas, so it doesn't really narrow it down any at all. But she leaves the tape with him to work on it.
Okay.
On the way to work, again, we hear about a near miss of the Night Stalker. Someone was almost killed, but fortunately survived. And we see Maxine flashback to driving over Pearl's head in X. She's headed to the lot because she is going to meet Elizabeth Bender, the director. And when she arrives at the security gate, gives them her name. I'm Maxine Minx. And the security guard goes, yes, you are.
Yeah.
And it's like this constant. I was like, all right, okay.
Yeah, it's like everyone knows who she is. Everyone's seen her work.
We see that people are specifically picketing the making of The Puritan 2, which, you know, there's like The Puritan is blasphemy.
Right.
And one of the guys holding a sign sure looks like the bearded guy we saw in the Tabby and Amber snuff film who was recording it. So like we've seen this guy involved with that. So that's already like, but she doesn't know that, obviously. And we see Elizabeth roll up with this great scene with Elizabeth Debicki where she has Maxine jump in the golf cart and then just sort of talks to her about the industry for the next 10 minutes. And so they're driving on the lot. She's like, huh, look at these protesters. What a pathetic lot. Angry people are so easy to control. And they're driving past all the facades, like the facade of a theater, an apartment building, like all these really fun sets. And Elizabeth says, I'm gonna be honest, the producers don't want you in the picture. They say it's too controversial, which is hilarious. It's like, oh, our satanic horror movie can't have a porn star in it. Cowards. She says, look, you did something really raw and honest and ruthless during your audition. Are you a ruthless person? And Maxie says, yeah, I can definitely confirm I am, for sure. And Elizabeth says, good, that makes two of us. You have to be a woman in Hollywood. Hollywood is prejudiced against actual artists, but these conservatives are going to protest the movies anyway, so you might as well make them mean something. And she's talking about her character. She's like, your character Veronica is a powder keg. She's a killer, but she's not a villain. Clint Eastwood meets Charles fucking Bronson, and that's what will set this picture apart, revealing that underneath the technicolor exterior of the 50s were just as rotten as today. It's a B movie with A ideas, Maxine. And Maxine's like, oh, okay. And I want you to know, are you willing to do whatever it takes, even if your life depends on it?
Mm.
And Maxine says, it does. So She says, great, we're going to prove them all wrong with a fucking bloodbath. And they drive over to the motel. You see the motel from Psycho and then the house on the hill behind it.
Okay.
She says, you know, they shot a sequel to it not too long ago. A serial killer disguised as an old woman. America was too prudish to ever see it coming. Some things never change. She tells Maxine, I'd like you to come to set tomorrow. We're shooting the flashbacks. I'd like you to meet Molly Bennett, who played Clara on the first film. Of course, she died at the end of the first film, but we'll see her again in a flashback. And I think it would be really nice for you two to meet. The first movie, I would be honest, it was pure filth. It was basically a stag film, but we're legit now. They don't show stag films on 900 screens, Maxine. Meanwhile, the whole time, Maxine is staring at the psycho house and sees Pearl in the window.
Yeah.
Until finally, Elizabeth says, are you listening to me? And Maxine looks back and Pearl's gone. Elizabeth says, can I give you some advice? You've made it here into the belly of the beast. Now it must be your obsession, because if you take your eyes off that prize, Maxine, the beast will spit you right back out and it might never get a taste for you again. Maxine's like, oh, okay. Which I do think her reactions were kind of like, you know, in SNL, like there's that character Chad,
Pete Davidson.
What's his name? Pete Davidson. Yeah. God, sorry, Pete Davidson. And they're just like, people are constantly declaring things to him. He goes, okay. It's, there's a little bit of that, but in a way that I think Murphy character, she's like, yeah, I already like killed a bunch of people. Like, yeah, I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah,
I will do it.
Right. Yeah. I'm not scared. Like, there's nothing that you could bring
you
to the table.
You have to convince me, honey. Yeah. I have nothing else. Yeah.
This has to work.
Nothing else going on for me. We see her drive off the lot. Again, the protesters have to get out of the way of her car, and she is tailed onto a side street by John Labatt. Only this time she sees him, and when she gets to the side street, she pulls over and she gets out of her car and she has her car keys in between her fingers. And as she approaches his car, she sees that he's recording her with a camcorder. And he basically jokes like, oh, now you're afraid of being recorded? Allison, she punches him in the side of the head with her keys and just starts punching him, blood spraying all over the inside of his car as the song Saint Elmo's Fire plays. It's so good because it's such an upbeat song. And she's just wailing on him.
Wow.
And then finally kicks his side mirror off. And she says, if you get in my way again, I will kill you. And she gets back in her car and peels off. And he screams, you're going to pay for that. Now it's personal. You're going to lose more than your job, you whore. Fortunately, Maxine does what you said, Allison, and finally goes to tell someone.
Thank God.
She goes to her agent's office, TNA agency. And demands to see her agent, Teddy Knight Esquire. And we see Giancarlo is on his exercise bike in like a matching sweatsuit and has like his hair looks like his hair looks like an incredible 80s toupee.
Yes.
Does that make it like it's like curled and like really like sprayed? And she's on headset, and he's doing some dirty dealings already, and he says, look, I can get you the bearer bonds, I just need access to your junkyard for a couple hours, that's it. So it's like, whatever, that's it's already a crime. And all of the posters in their offices of like movies that their clients have worked on are all great. Like there's one that she sits in front of, it's called The Waking of Eleanor, and it's like, oh, what a perfect name for like a giallo.
Yeah,
it's like
so good.
And she comes in and says, you're my lawyer, right? So we have confidentiality. And he says, I'm an entertainment lawyer, but sure. what's going on? And she tells him the whole story. And Teddy says, look, I discovered you on the street when you got here. I put you in the movies. Why did you come to me sooner? She's like, I don't know. I didn't know.
Does she tell him about the events of X? Like, does she tell him about the murders and like her surviving?
The implication is yes. Okay. And I think Teddy's like, but from the point of view of like, that just happened, it was not my fault, I only killed to survive. And Teddy's like, I understand that, I'm an agent, I please, like everything goes back to like, listen, I'm your agent. Yeah. It's fine, you know. And he says, look, if you hear from that private dick again, you tell him to call your agent, because no one is more passionate about your film career than me. I will go to jail over it. No one's gonna get away with your big break. And I'm like, I want an agent like that. I want an agent that will kill for me. Dave, a by friend of the pod, Dave, said that he thinks that this role should have been played by like a Fred Melamed type, where it's like a really sort of like regular manager agent, like an older Jewish man who then also ramps up into the movie, which I think is fun, because as soon as you see Giancarlo Esposito, you're like, okay, well, that guy's gonna commit some sort of act of violence
involved.
And I'm going to love watching it. But there is like funny about like a more subdued gentleman that has to like get a sawed off shotgun. But great as it is, Teddy says, go home, get some sleep, and I will take care of this. OK, at home, you know, it's the end of the day. She's trying to relax. She does a few lines of coke. And she starts reading the screenplay for The Puritan 2, which is also written by Elizabeth Bender. And we see her put her pearl handled gun under her pillow. Unfortunately, Allison, it's been a minute since we've seen an act of violence.
Yes.
And John Labatt is very angry and really only knows one thing about this woman, and that she has one friend, and that is Leon.
Oh, no.
And we see Leon, he's working alone. It's the middle of the night at the movie store. And somebody comes in, and we don't see who it is. And he says, can I help you? And we see his reaction. And he says, I don't do that kind of work anymore, which I took to assume he used to do porn or sex work. Yeah. He's like, I don't do that kind of work anymore. It's just a video store, and we're closing soon. And we see him hustle like a little old white man out. And he flips over the sign. And unfortunately, Allison, while he was doing that, he does not see that there is someone else in the store. And we see a black gloved hand pick up Leon's knife. Oh, why, Leon, did you have a giant serrated knife that you carry around with you? Allison, before Leon could even turn away from the door, the killer slashes him across the back of the neck. And we cut between like the text of Maxine's screenplay and the murder, which I thought was really fun.
Oh, that's great.
Less fun. The killer slashes Leon across the eye.
Ugh.
And then stands over him, stabbing him. Unfortunately, Allison, he kills Leon. And then he tears out his cross necklace out of his earlobe. And we see this figure in black slide into the passenger seat of John Labatt, who again is all cut up from being having his ass kicked.
Attacked. Yeah.
And John looks and sees his black gloves are dripping with blood, and he almost vomits. And John says, almost impressed, he's like, well, you know, not a lot of men in your position have the stomach to go all the way. Maxine wakes up in the morning, and I love these moments, like these kind of specifics, where literally she's been like studying so hard that like the pages are all over the place, including there's a page on her back. Like she memorized her lines so hard, like the screenplay exploded in her hands or something, and she fell asleep.
Like rolling around in it.
And it was so fun. She wakes up to a phone call. It's Teddy Knight. He said, okay, I've done a little digging. I called the number that he gave you. It just goes to an answering service in Louisiana. The Bonaventure has no record of a John Labatt, which makes sense. He probably used a fake name. This guy's a pro, but I will figure out what to do. Unfortunately, while on the phone, she looks out the front window and she sees police cars pulling up outside the movie store, which is on her block. Allison, she rushes out just in time to see them carry out a body covered in a blood-soaked sheet. They're not even pretending like they're, like, just get a new sheet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, put something else, like, if that sheet gets bloody, like, put something else on top of it.
Yeah, tarp,
like,
just, come on.
No one needs to see that.
Unfortunately, Detective Williams sees Maxine in the crowd, and I think to test her reaction to see, oh, did she kill this man, she pulls back the sheet to see Maxine's reaction. And we see that Leon is not simply dead, but also has been branded with the same pentagram burned into his forehead. Of course, Maxine wigs out. She tries to rush the police tape. She has to be held back. She's distraught. And we see it cuts to that, to a delicious looking 80s can of Coke dropping out of a Coke machine down at the morgue. And Detective Williams hands it to Maxine, and they take her in to see Tabby and Amber's body too. So she didn't know that it happened yet. So now we have three bodies, all with pentagrams, all connected to Maxine. And they said, we don't think that these are Night Stalker murderers, but they are being set up to look like them, and you're the common denominator. No. Why would that be, Maxine? And of course, she's like, I'm not going to really say anything to the cops. And Detective Torres says, are you scared? Because if I was scared, I'd be asking for help. You've got a lot to lose, Maxine. You're not some barefoot bitch at a bus stop anymore. And Detective Williams is like, all right, okay. Like every time he gets through, she's like, all right. So look, we don't care what you're involved in. We don't care if you're partying. We don't care if you're turning tricks. We care about these bodies and making sure we do not have more of them, okay? And then Torres goes,
you Hollywood girls, you're so desperate to become famous, you don't even realize how easy it is to become infamous. Could be you on one of these slabs, Maxine.
And Maxine says, but it's not, is it? I have to go. I'm late for work. And then she turns to go. And Detective Williams follows her out and says, please, just tell us anything you know. Just anything to help us. And Maxine says, well, what am I supposed to do? And Williams says, to help me save the next girl. And Maxine says, well, maybe she should save herself. I did. And then she storms out of the morgue. Cut to, we are on the set of The Pilgrim 2. They're shooting the flashbacks, and we see the actress Molly as the character Clara, and she's picking up a red apple. She's in the full pilgrim look. She picks up a red apple off of like a leaf color covered floor of the forest and bites into it, and of course blood explodes from the apple and drips down her face. And Elizabeth Bender, the director, says cut and says, God, it looks horrible. It's like a bad Hammer picture. Someone get me a Valium. Like, she's already worked up. Maxine runs in because she is late. And Elizabeth says, if you waste my time again, you are out of the picture. Maxine says, of course, that won't happen again. And she goes to introduce Maxine to the actress, Molly. And then she hand paints the blood on Molly's face. And she says, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. Molly Bennett, meet Maxine Minx. And Elizabeth jokes when they shake hands, like, well, we all have our blood on our hands now, don't we, ladies? Afterwards, Molly goes to her trailer and gives Maxine sort of like her advice. She says, look, Elizabeth's a lot, but she's a genius and she will be a mentor to you. Just don't get on her bad side and don't overthink the acting. You know, like, do what she says. You're going to get loads of jobs. She's very loyal to people that she works with. I'm living proof. My character died and my charred scream is immortalized forever. And yet she still had me back. And she gives this like silent scream sort of like over the top. And she tells Maxine, you're going to be great. From what I tell you, you're a great actress. So if you'll excuse me, I have to get up, get cleaned up. I'm going to this big party in the hills for this out-of-town producer. It was so nice to meet you, Nadine. And then she goes inside. Uh-oh. Maxine walks back to set. And for the first time, we see it's like this whole time she's been dressed like different variations on like sort of like different porn looks. And then when she's dressed down, she's sort of like an all black high heel leather boot. Love. And this is the first scene where she's dressed like a regular girl, like her own age. So she has like white sneakers, jeans, like a teal like track jacket.
Yeah.
And I just like that they were, it's sort of like, yes, she is still like a 25-year-old.
Like a person. Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Allison, as she tries to walk back to set from the trailers, she turns a corner and finds John Labatt. And he shows her the gun tucked into his pants. And he says, you're going to go come with me and let's do this without making a scene. Okay. You don't want people to like, you don't want to get a reputation around here. She, of course, runs and he chases her. And they get this really fun chase scene where they're running through the studio. And like they're going, like she runs into like there's a fake store set up full of like pinatas. They have to run through that. They're running through these fake streets. And then finally she ends up running up the stairs to the psycho house and through the front door. But they're like the far distant corner of the lot, like nobody's there, and he stops to catch his breath and he pulls out his gun, and just as he's about to open the door to the psycho house where she is standing terrified behind it, the security guard says, excuse me, you can't be up there, sir. And John turns around and stashes his gun and says, I'm sorry, my morbid curiosity must have gotten a hold of me. And the security guard leads him away back to the gate. Maxine makes it back to set and Elizabeth stops her. And also, like, all of Elizabeth Debicki's outfits are incredible. Like, she has, like, a knee-high riding boot in every scene.
Ugh.
And she runs up and she stops her.
A director, if ever there was one.
And she says, the Puritan 2 is my chance. And Maxine says, I will do anything you say. I want this to be good. And Elizabeth says, okay, well, clearly something is interfering with your ability to do this work. So take the weekend, let loose, get it out of your system, because Monday the real work begins. And what do you whatever you have going on in your personal life that's interfering with your ability to do this, squash it. And Maxine says, I intend to. Allison, who will survive this movie?
Who will survive?
I keep going back and forth on if Maxine lives or dies at the end of this. Like, it really could, like, I could see her, like, emerging a sole survivor of a deadly, you know, massacre again, and like it propelling her to like actual superstardom. I also could see like all of the events of the past movie catching up and her dying.
What's your gut instinct?
I think she's gonna die at the very, very end.
Great.
Labatt will he'll find out the truth about what happened from her, but he will also die.
Okay, great. Do you think the director will live?
Part of me is like, she is gonna kill her in order to make the movie like get a lot of attention.
Okay, love. And then who do you think the person who is stalking her, who do you think it is?
I'm gonna guess it's her father.
Okay,
because he was like the mega Christian. I can't remember if he was like alive or dead at the beginning of the other movie, though.
Yes, but we do know either way that he is he was a big mega preacher, you know, sort of like that's what
and
set
was
her
like upset with her. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
We see Maxine put on her war paint. It's this really fabulous, like sort of a bar of pink eyeshadow. Puts on her fishnets. Puts on an outfit. And she goes to talk to, again, just like you suggested, her porn director slash security friend Shepard, who we see take out his two Dobermans out of their cage.
Okay.
And we see Maxine blowing rails and getting ready to set a trap. We see her go to a club. And of course, she knows that John Lamette's following her everywhere. So John Lamette ends up in the club. But the thing is that this is Maxine's territory,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So she sort of is like seducing him in the crowd. And it's like unclear. It's like she's watching him. He's watching her. And then finally she ducks through a doorway to the back to the restrooms. He sort of bumbles into the women's restroom and starts kicking open each stall in turn, brandishing his gun. And each toilet has more poop in it. So just when you think, well, that was too much poop, well, the next one will have more. And there's four toilets and they're all a goddamn wreck. People at this, I guess it's the Coke. People need to go home. Yeah. If this is what's happening, you got to take a breather.
Yeah, right. Take it home.
Unfortunately, Elson kicks open the last stall door and he sees it's empty, but the window is cracked open. And he runs out onto the loading dock where the window lets out. And he sees Maxine standing in front of a car and suddenly he's blinded by the car's headlights.
Yes.
And the car is, of course, driven by none other than Teddy Knight Esquire, because the hunter has become the hunted, Allison. And Maxine tells John Labatt, time to pay for your sins. And Shepard, the security guard slash director, jumps out of the shadows and bashes John Labatt in the head with a 2x4 and it knocks him completely out cold. He falls off the loading dock and hits like a ton of bricks. Allison, when John wakes up, he is in the driver's seat of his car, handcuffed to the wheel, and he sits beneath the car crusher in a junkyard. As Maxine, Teddy, and Shepard look on, and he tells Maxine, you got the devil in you. And she says, I thought you were an atheist.
Ooh.
Suddenly, Allison, the crusher starts to come down. He says, please, I can be bought. I don't want to die in here. And he starts praying the Our Father. Allison, it's simply too late. The crusher kills him, smushing him, and a waterfall of blood dumps under the front door. And Teddy tells Maxine, get lost. We'll clean it up.
How?
I guess he didn't have DNA back then. So I guess if you just like hosed it down. Also, the implication is junkyard is covered in this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's like what junkyards are for.
Maxine tells Teddy, thanks. And Teddy replies, what are agents for? Which I think is fun.
That's nice.
And then Shepard releases his Dobermans and they rush over and they start lapping up the blood and gore. It's like, whoa.
Oh.
That night, Allison, Maxine takes a long hot shower, looks at her bare face in the mirror, and she finds the envelope that says 166 Starlight Drive, where, of course, the soiree is happening. She crumples it up and throws it away. But then on the news, she sees there's been another murder. The anchor says Los Angeles residents are begging for someone, anyone, to come forward and stop these vicious murders. And she flashes back to Detective Williams saying, you're supposed to help me save the next girl's life. So she does feel a responsibility.
Yes,
she's like, oh, God damn it. And she fishes the address out of her garbage can. And we flash back to each girl, Tabby, Amber, and, oh, right, Molly said she was going to be at some hot party in the hills. Fuck! Maxine throws some clothes on and gets into her car because it looks like it's time to party, Allison. Fortunately for her, Detectives Torres and Williams are following her now. So they follow her up into the hills where she parks on Starlight Drive and then takes like a gondola, which is basically like a funicular. And I assume that was sort of a nod to the Angel's Flight funicular in downtown Los Angeles.
Yes.
Which is really fun. And like, obviously it's a set. So it's like the house is like 50 feet below the Hollywood sign. Like it's obviously a comically positioned house up there. Not that there aren't houses up there, but just not quite that close.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
She gets out of the car, approaches the hill, and takes the gondola up. And finally, luckily she brought her gun, so we know that she has one. She pushes open the unlocked front door and looks into the living room. A sickening home, by the way. And as she walks through the dark and starts to mount the stairs to the second story, she hears the click of a VCR player. And Allison, she sees the green double doors in front of her that we saw in Tabby and Amber's snuff film. And she hears, of course, the sound of her father's voice from when she was a child on that videotape we saw at the beginning. There's no one like you. You're going to be a star of the church someday. Oh, I just want to be like you, Daddy. What do we always say? I will not accept a life I do not deserve. And of course, she opens the door and we see a TV playing the home video and the man watching it turns to reveal that it is her father.
Yeah.
And we see his little black gloves next to him. He says, oh, darling, it took you years to find you. Let me take you home. And we see he approaches her and she's so stunned, he's able to grab her gun out of her hand. The TV changes to footage of the Hollywood sign. And he says, you know, I'm making a film now, too. I'm calling it Hollywood Exposed. And we see like glimpses of like protesters and of Maxine as a teenager. And underneath her photo, it says, to the devil, a daughter. He says, you, Maxine, will be the star. And of course, she tries to back up because she's like, oh, okay. So like, we're insane in the same way, but you seem to have taken it to this next level.
Yes.
And she backs up on the landing and he says, they've been using the television for years, honey, turning our children into deviants, but we'll put a stop to them together. I and so many other grieving parents like me have come forth to expose the devil once and for all. The Satan is inside of you, my darling, but I can take him out. It'll be the climax of the film. And when he says this, Maxine like backs up and starts to fall down the stairs. And when she does, she knocks over a suitcase that is sitting on the landing. And when it tumbles down in front of her, we see falling out of it is the severed head, 1 foot and one arm of Molly, the actress from The Puritan. So he has murdered her, dismembered her, and put her in this suitcase. Unfortunately, Maxine barely has time to react because her father throws a plastic bag over her head. Ugh. And she tries to fight him, but he asphyxiates her until she falls unconscious. In the darkness, we hear the casting director for The Puritan 2 say, would you mind taking off your top so we could see your breasts? And Maxine tells them, you know, you should cast me in this movie. I say, well, why is that? And she stands up and says, because I'm a star. Ain't nobody else like me. The whole world is going to know my name. Unfortunately, Allison, Maxine wakes up to find herself blindfolded and tied to a palm tree that's sort of like on the platform in the middle of a swimming pool, which I thought was just, what a blast.
That's great.
So fun. And around the pool is all her father's followers from his church who are all in white robes and kind of like kiss makeup. And they're all like, one guy's the boom mic, one guy's filming, you know, like they're all like serving roles in his production. And her dad walks on this little walkway to the platform. He says, don't be frightened. I'm going to give you everything you ever wanted. Fame that will never end. I tried to help your friends, but they wouldn't accept God's love. So they were punished by his wrath. But not you. You will be saved. And I just want to give a shout out to the actor who plays this character. Simon Prest. He is a director and actor from New Zealand. And he does play her father in X as well, obviously. Oh, okay. When we the limited time we see him, and he calls to his followers, are you rolling? And he looks to camera and he says, tonight I will perform an exorcism for the whole world to see. And he sort of shouts out Ezekiel, says,
evidence of your possession shall finally reveal Hollywood as the cult it is.
Luring children into lives of sin. The devil is real, and he deserves no place on the screens in our homes. I have come to save all lost children. And then below his under his breath he goes, play along with daddy now, it's your big scene. And he pulls off her blindfold and grabs her and he screams, denounce your life of sin, only then will you receive divine intervention. And if not, you'll be marked with the sign of the beast. And one of his followers hands him a red hot brand with the pentagram on it to burn it into her face. Fortunately, we hear a shout, hold it, motherfucker. And it's Detective Torres. Fortunately,
that's good.
And Detective Williams rushes out at the same time. One of the pastor's followers pulls out a sawed-off shotgun. Fortunately, Detective Williams blows him away. And then it's pretty just much as fucking mayhem.
Yeah.
William screams, mass is ended, put your hands up. Unfortunately, all these followers are either running or already have guns on them. So there's just like gunplay back and forth between the cops and these religious zealots. And, you know, Maxine's dad screaming, they are the devil. Only the Lord watches over you. You know, commanding his followers to murder the cops. Fortunately, Maxine's dad in the mayhem drops the pentagram poker and it sets his vestments on fire. So he is forced to plunge himself into the pool. Love all the pool work. There's a lot of people falling in the pool. It's very fun.
If you're gonna do a movie in LA in the Hollywood Hills, you have to do a lot of pool work.
But he climbs out of the pool, he's able to slip away, and he starts running towards the Hollywood sign. Fortunately, Maxine, who is still tied up, she has her trusty switchblade with her, and she's able to saw her bindings off. But then one of the followers leaps up and drags her into the pool, and she rams the knife into his eye.
A lot of stabbing in the eye in this film.
And then my favorite moment, Detective Williams shoots a guy in a balcony and he like pinwheels like comically into the pool. Just what a blast. Finally, all the followers are either dead or have run away. And Detective Torres and Williams run after her father. And Williams says, just stay here, okay? We've got this. Help is on the way. And Maxine looks down and sees a sawed-off shotgun that one of the followers was using. And she picks it up and says, so am I. So now the three of them are all running after her father up around the Hollywood sign. So the rest of it's like at the Hollywood sign, which is very fun.
That's very fun.
And she hears Torres and Williams are up ahead of her and they scream freeze and a shot in the dark. And unfortunately, Detective Torres has been shot and Williams runs ahead to try to catch the father. And Maxine has to stay and hold a dying Torres in her arms. And Bobby Cannavale gets like a final little monologue and he's chewing it up. He goes, you know, 30 years in this city, I've never been up here before. I wanted to be an actor once too. And he like reaches up and touches the Hollywood sign. And then his hand, like his bloody hand, leaves a trail that slips off and he dies. So fun. Unfortunately, we hear a shot and Detective Williams comes running back and says, I got him. I told you I get him. But then she has a crucifix jammed in her eye. And in the most insane moment of the movie, she trips and falls and then just tumbles down the hill into the darkness. And Maxine's just like, all right, well, and then goes after her father. But it's just a funny way to take that character out. I was like, I don't know if she's dead, but she did tumble down the hill with a cross jammed in her eye.
Yeah, probably. Probably dead, or at least slowed down a lot.
Allison, Maxine walks behind the Hollywood sign and sees her father bloody, bleeding out, dying. And he tells her, it was all for you. I wanted you to be just like your daddy, but I created a monster. So please forgive me. Failing a child is the greatest sin of all. And suddenly an LAPD helicopter hovers over and says, drop the weapon. Her father tells her, your vision in this light, a beautiful shining star. The helicopter yells down, drop the weapon. This is your last chance. It's over, Maxine. And we see looks up and the image glitches. We just static. We see a news report about the apprehension of the actual Night Stalker, who was in real life chased down and apprehended by like regular citizens, which is true, and caught. And in this same like news report, we have another segment. We are joined this evening by Maxine Minx, star of The Puritan 2, joined, of course, by her attorney, Teddy Knight, and our own Diane Mattingly. And we see Maxine and Teddy sitting with the reporter. And the reporter says, Maxine, you become quite a celebrity outside of the movie business as well by taking down a serial killer of your own father. And Maxine says, it was a harrowing experience. And I thank God for orchestrating this all. And we then see her at the premiere of The Puritan 2 at the Chinese Theater. Of course, everyone's screaming her name, bouquets of flowers. They've got her head shot. She's waving to everybody. She looks fabulous. And reporters swarm her and say, you know, we heard that you sold your life rights. And then Elizabeth Bender will be directing the movie of your life, the Maxine movie. And she says, that's true. And the reporter asks, well, what would you tell young girls who are trying to get this start in their industry like you? Maxine says, you know, never give up. It's hard work. But, you know, there's a phrase my daddy always used to tell me that I always repeat to myself. And we flash back to the moment of the Hollywood sign. And she tells her dad, say it with me now. I will not accept a life I do not deserve. You didn't fail me, Daddy. You gave me just what I needed. And she lifts off the sawed-off shotgun and says, divine intervention. And she blows his head into a million wet pieces that I was not expecting. And on screen, 1 month later, we see a big bouquet and a congratulation notes from Teddy. And we see that it looks like Maxine is back in her trailer. So I took this to be that this is now the set of The Puritan 3. Because The Puritan 2 already came out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Maxine's back in her trailer. What I took it to be is that, like, it's The Puritan 3, but her character has died. So now she's in the flashbacks. So just like how she's Molly was in the flashbacks. Collins. Yeah. So we see her inner character as Veronica. She's doing coke in her dressing room while a sort of an old-timey version of There's No Business, like show business playing. I love this.
And that's fun.
Knock on the door. It's the same AP as a doctor earlier. They said, they're ready for you, Miss Minx. And she looks herself in the mirror and she says, you're a fucking movie star. Everyone on set claps when she comes out. Elizabeth Bender said, thank you so much. We're so grateful to be here. And please, let's give a moment of silence for Molly Bennett that she can't be here for this. And they all bow their heads in silence and they get back to filming. And Elizabeth says to Maxine, you look just like a Hitchcock blonde. How does it feel being someone else? Maxine says, good. Elizabeth tells her, it's tragic. Molly would have never made it past the franchise. She was good, but she wasn't a star like you. I want you to watch the dream sequence. So we see that that's where they're using the replica of Maxine's severed head on the bed. Uh-huh. And they watch, and Elizabeth asks, now that you have the whole world's attention, what do you want to do next? And Maxine says, I just never want it to end. And we zoom in on her severed head on the bed while Betty Davis Eyes plays and the credits roll. And we slowly zoom out from the studio and we soar up to the Hollywood sign. The end.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a fun one.
A real treat. My favorite Ty West movie for sure. Though I did like House of the Devil, but this really knocked my socks off.
Yeah, this was great.
Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think may have been made in the movie Maxine?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, Maxine did most things right. Mm-hmm. Also, she survived. So I guess like her mistakes wouldn't be fatal anyway. I mean, her father being a maniacal evangelical hunting down his daughter so that he can nearly kill her into subservience and make her a star in the eyes that he has for her. Like, I mean, that was pretty fatal. That was bad. Like, I guess she could have been a little more upfront with some people at the top, just about her, like, his, like, especially because it's not like she killed 9 people. Like, right. But I also understand being like, I can't, this just can't be part of my story.
Yeah, I feel like she handled it as well as possible. I mean, really, the fatal mistake is to not be able to analyze that organized religion is Hollywood, and that the things that you fault Hollywood for, you are doing, and one would argue worse, because you think that people will go to hell after they die.
Right.
Which is incredibly dark, and then you use that to try to control people. So I guess that would be the mistake.
Yes.
But other than that,
That's the big one.
But like, Teddy did great. Shepard was great. Like, the detectives did the, I mean, the detectives, unfortunately, probably both are dead, but they did the best they could. They were, you know, they followed her. They intervened. They saved Maxine's life. And did kill him. I mean, he probably would have died even if Maxine hadn't blown him away, but then again, she did.
Right.
So,
she did.
I think people were operating at the best.
She earned it.
You just have to remember to tell Leon. When in doubt, just tell Leon. Okay. Leon deserves to know. Like,
yeah. But I mean, I guess it didn't really like do much to help him or her.
Yeah. I guess it's like she didn't know. She couldn't have necessarily known that they were going to escalate to kill him.
Yes. Right.
And then finally, where would you place this movie on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
There's a lot of getting crushed by the car compactor is very gross. There's a lot of eye stabbing. And also just like, I find fanatical religious characters terrifying in general. So, but also this was so much fun.
Yes,
like,
I agree.
I'll give it a 5 for scary and spookiness, but I would give this a 10 out of 10 for enjoyment in a way that I'm like, I would watch this probably.
Yeah, I would guess 5 feels right, because like there were moments like in that alley where I was like, whoa, but it was more a blast. Like, this was a complete blast. Yeah. This was not particularly, there certainly scary moments, but was not really going for something genuinely scary. But I thought this was by far,
it's more like, you know, who is after her and why, which has like more of a thriller vibe than like horror.
And I do think like you could have watched this movie, except I think it is too gory. I think like it passes over to a point where I think that would be why you can't watch it, versus like the actual scares. Like, I think if this was a more sedate, bloodless version, you'd be fine. But this, I think when they do go there, it is pretty gross and gnarly. So that would be my concern.
All right.
Well, everyone, hope you enjoyed this as much as we did.
And yes, this is such a fun one.
Yeah, we'll keep it going. And you know what? Good for her.
Good for her.
All right, and good for you. And until next time,
you, and please keep it spooky.
Bye.
Bye.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Ruin Podcast, or join us at patreon.com/ruinpodcast for exclusive episodes and video content.
Ruin is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Sage Spielman.